Welcome back to the Fundamentals of Application Lifecycle Management. I'm Stephen Borg.
And I'm James Tupper.
And back from a great meal. Let's get on with the fundamentals. And the first thing we're going to be talking about today is invisibility, is project management. So if we take a look at our module overview, we're going to talk specifically to the project managers and viewing a project from end to end. How's it going? What are the developers doing? All of those things that project management does. But it's in a module called visibility, because it's very important that we understand that visibility extends far beyond just project management and is useful for the whole team. So we'll talk about project management here, mm-hmm. but in the demo, we'll dive into a lot more details.
Yep.
Also, hierarchical work visibility. This is where we start to talk about work rolling up and being viewed by executive teams, management teams, development teams. So we'll talk very briefly about that. That's a kind of a parent-child Kanban board relationship. And then blazing fast through a ton of slides to show you some of the TFS reports. There's a whole lot of different reports. I wanted to pull out a few of those just to show you, and then we're gonna wrap that with a demo and talk about two tips and tricks, things to manage your software practices. So, project management. Let's look at that traditional project management approach again. We did it with QA, let's take it with PMs. We define the BRDs, those business requirement documents, up front with functional specs and diagrams and reams of paper, and you might call your business analyst the lumberjack or something. There's so much paper there, just piles. That's traditional, and then they pass it off to developers who then create technical specifications for all these things months over months. And then a big giant Gantt chart is built, and we start to understand what's happening in the Gantt chart, and we check off boxes as we go down the Gantt chart. Testing then occurs, UAT occurs, we do some deployment, and just after bankruptcy, it all gets sold to some other company that acquired us. Little bit tongue-in-cheek there. The traditional PM process is one that has worked and does work for a lot of organizations. Usually, however, not in software development. So a little bit tongue-in-cheek there, but I think there's a nugget of truth to the dangers of traditional project management. It causes a lot of things that we run into, like slow feedback, sometimes painfully slow feedback, managing the wrong things. And it just kind of doesn't talk to teamwork and the power of a cohesive team. And I think that's one of the really critical things we need. That's why we need to get visibility and transparency through our development process so we can really understand what's happening. And we'll show you how to do that without getting too soapboxy on this. PM in a modern life cycle looks a lot like PM or dev or QA or operations in a modern life cycle, right? We want to squish this time down. Get these acceptance tests built for small requirements, get them going, spin them through as quickly as possible, and deliver them out to production. That's one of the keys. Again, I'm going to go through this very fast, but I wanted to come back and talk once again to make sure we understand storyboards, we get feedback, all these things are connected, and this is going to allow us to more effectively manage our software development efforts. Mm-hmm. So again, we've covered this quite at length. Now this is just a refresher to show all of the possible work item linkages between these various components. All right. For those of you who've heard me present, I can talk an awful long time on traditional project management and sing the praises of lean and agile project management. But I'm not going to do so right now. I wanted to keep that nice and short. In the first section, we pointed you to four very good MVA courses. In each of those MVA courses, we go into a lot more detail there. I want to focus this session really on understanding how to manage a project as an example. So that'll be done mostly through demo. But before we do that, let's talk a little bit from the Enterprise Agility course in MVA. I pulled these slides directly, and we can look at this hierarchy of things we're working on. At the executive level, we're talking about things that take months to execute, major initiatives, thoughts, etc. We walk down to the managerial level, we're looking at epics, things that might take multiple sprints to deliver. And then we go down to the teams level, and whether they're using Kanban or Scrum, they're implemented with this kind of common cadence. Now, how does this apply to visibility of all things? It's important that we have visibility and transparency into everything that's happening on these boards so that people can go in and determine what's happening without having to dive in and ask a lot of questions. Secondly, we can start to make sure we're flowing through these boards and these columns very rapidly. One last note, and this is more soapboxy than the last slide, but remember who defines what. If you are asking people to do work, you need to define what done means. And if you're someone who's accepting work and to taking it on, you need to define things like, what does it mean for that work to be ready? In other words, if an executive rolls out a large initiative but doesn't provide things like, what's the funding PO, or how are we going to fund this thing, that's not going to work for management. That's something management needs to be ready to execute. So management provides that to the executive team. The executive team provides, what does it mean for management to be done with the work? And so forth on down the chain. All right, team foundation server reporting. Now I promised this would be very quick, and it will be. Again, TFS provides instant visibility. Now, there are other tools as well. This is not a tool presentation, but I know TFS best. And I insanely love that deep, deep, deep integration. So here, an example of stories, this stories overview, where we can really understand end-to-end what's happening. Here's some more reports. There's reports you can build in Excel that you simply point against the OLAP cube. Things like burn down, task progress, user story progress, trends and issues that are coming up, backlog management, all sorts of stuff that you can deal with around bugs. Mm-hmm. Build management, code coverage during builds. You showed the importance of that, James. Code churn, I like this. This is how many lines of code have been modified. You see this as a real interesting chart as you get close to a release. Normally it dips, you don't have much, and then boom, it ramps up just before a release. You have a little spike up, and then hopefully a drop back down just prior to that release. That kind of cadence. Oh no! Lots of little fixes, and then final testing and off you go into the release. But if you see a very high slope, it might freak you out a little bit. So these reports can provide some pretty interesting details. Test management reports are a whole other set of reports. These things, like how are our test cases going? Our test activity, what's happening with our failures? Build quality indicators reports. What's our code coverage looking like? What are our active bugs, failed tests, passing tests? You name it, just a lot of details there. Build success over time. Now this one, I don't see as used very often because there's the nice out of the box built one right next to every build name. You see the build name and right next to it, there's a little build chart that you can click on, kind of a spark line kind of a thing.
Yep.
The build summary report lets you know on the various types of builds, whether they've passed, failed, succeeded, code coverage, all of those sorts of things. These are all the out-of-the-box ones that come with SQL Server reporting services. We've already talked about the importance of the stories overview report, but there's also a progress report, which looks at it a little bit differently. It's more of a percent complete rather than a total complete. Release burn downs, very useful to know if you have a large bucket of scope, how close are we getting to deliver that scope? My guess, they're gonna finish it up here pretty soon.
Yeah, on track.
Yep, sprint burn downs, also do burn downs inside of a sprint. There's a kind of a linear thing driven in here. You can see kind of where you're projected to end, assuming you continue to deliver in the same way, not necessarily a safe assumption. Test plan progress reports are available. And demo. I told you, I gave you fair warning, a lot of those very quick. I don't want to interpret all of them because we don't use them as much internally to manage our own software development practices because we are in VSO Visual Studio Online. And one of the interesting things there is we don't have access to these reports. So I think that's a good case. So from a demo and looking at the software development effort, we're going into Visual Studio Online and we'll look at different ways that we manage these reports or manage this team. So let's pop down into Visual Studio Online and let's start with just the home page. Now, James and I come at this from a little different angle, right? Mm-hmm. James does a lot of the coding. He does a lot of the architecture work. He does a lot of the creative work as well. I do more of the look over people's shoulders and say, when's it going to be done? When's it going to be done? When's it going to be done? or what value's been delivered? Yeah. I usually don't ask when it'll be done, but really that focus on what have you done for me lately? Yeah. So I'm going to show you how I interpret it, and then we're going to turn it over, and James is going to show you a little bit of how he uses it on a day-to-day basis as well.
Perfect.
So let's start with my view. And I'm going to come in, and I look here, and I see a couple things. These are simply work item queries that are posted up here, and I see that there were 16 changes recently to work items. So I'm going to open those up and think, that's a lot of changes. So I might click that, drill in, and look at all of the things that have been changing. And when I look at these, most of them look like the changes have been state changes. People are moving them through various states. I'm all about that. That sounds great. I might look for some that are old or that might have been moved out. I see two new ones here. Bug exists, and app doesn't allow closing of closed date and CFD. That was our demo one. Dropped into our production app, but that's okay. Let me go back to home. That's kind of that first view I take. Next thing I look at is code commits and code changes. And I want to see some activity. Mm-hmm. I trust the team completely, but I still want to see that things are happening, things are moving, especially in the code base. In the data pipeline service, there have been two recent changes. In the data collector, no changes. Data access, no changes. The web.Aurelia, which is our big migration to the Aurelia framework, lots of changes, 17 recent changes. Those matter to me a lot. Mm-hmm. I can look down at my builds. Are my builds succeeding or failing? And you can see the data pipeline and the web. And I very often see a lot of failures in the builds. James, what's wrong? What's going on? What's causing those failures?
Lots of different things, right? As we go on and as we kind of progress through our evolution of developing software and creating these particular components of this application, we are changing rapidly. Especially, it's pretty new, so we're changing constantly, which means we're changing a lot of other things constantly. One of the questions that Jeff had was around databases specifically, continuous integration and continuous deployment of databases. A lot of that difficulty we see as test data, right? So like we don't have a lot of really great test data because you can't fake data in TFS, right? So most of our testing comes from, sweet, we have a new alpha customer that wants to get on and we can now put a data collector on their system and we can collect the data and see if our stuff works against it, right? We're starting to get past that particular road bump and we're starting to actually generate our own data so that we can kind of test extreme and edge cases and that sort of thing. So that's, I would say that's the biggest reason why you see failures. If you drop back down in here and you'll see the data pipeline, that was a big change. We've made some pretty big changes specifically around the data pipeline recently, and you'll see they've been taking longer or shorter. One thing to note about the data pipeline is it's a long-running process and builds also time out after 30 minutes. So if the deployment takes longer than 30 minutes, then the build fails no matter what, even if it was successful. So there's a couple reasons, but it's more about why are they failing, not who can I go blame because it failed.
Right. and I didn't expect to see the data pipeline failing. One of the things, we'll see in a moment, is up on the Kanban board, there's an item that says, prep for one of those extremes, load a lot of data in our test environment. And that was literally several hundred thousand.
No, we got millions of rows in there now.
Yeah, millions and millions of rows of work items in a TFS server in one day, right?
Yep.
So that's very much an extreme case. Usually people don't add a million work items or have a million changes to TFS in a single day. But we kept breaking our pipeline when we brought on bigger folks. So these are the things that are constantly going through your mind. And anything that I'm looking at here is, it's a reflection of something deeper, and I need to tie and correlate and understand what's happening between so I can see, the data pipeline's breaking. I might just go to James. Good chance of that. But first, I might look at what's happening on the board and realize, yeah, we're bringing on a lot of data in a short amount of time. Mm-hmm. That's something that we haven't done before, but we've hit some extremes. So we're just testing those extremes. Mm-hmm. So if we come back, I'm going to see the web build. The web build runs very nicely across there. I can see a requirements work item chart, kind of like a burn up, but a strange one. Stale work items, this one's always important for me. These are work items that haven't been touched or updated in a long time. Now, if I see things like test suites, those don't get changed very often. Mm-hmm. Bugs that haven't been touched in over 60 days, that's gonna freak me out a little bit. So I might drill into that and understand what are some of these things. It looks like we might have a bug here. Python 3.4 throws errors when parsing CP1252, which is a default encoding. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, the fact is, we haven't touched that bug in a lot of days. We could go down and look at the history of the bug, right, and see how long it's been since we've touched it. And it's been months. So when you have that type of a thing, what you might decide to do is take that bug and remove it and just say, we're not doing it. That bug's gone. Mm-hmm. If we come across it again, we'll raise another bug.
Yep.
But if you're not going to react to bugs or product backlog items for a long period of time, not a bad practice to just get them off your plate. Part of the thing that you have to do as a product owner is manage that backlog. You don't want a backlog that's got thousands and thousands of things in it. You want a tight one so that you can understand and compare the differences. And if something's really never going to get done, let's just close it and move it out. So that was one we just closed. And I think that one was a legitimate one to close. There might be others as well. So back on the home. Again, a lot of stuff comes right from this homepage. I'm seeing more data collectors. Here's some of the other builds. Here's the data collector CI build. We know that there's some big changes coming in the data collector, so that's up there. That web CI build failed 4 hours ago. Was that us?
Yeah, there's
Okay.
Yeah.
So we got some. There we have it.
Yeah.
I learned something new.
Yep.
There's a couple other things.
Real quick.
Yeah, go ahead.
So one thing I take out of this, if we look at the tiles one more time, these purple tiles here, we've spent a lot of time decomposing our code into small Git repos so that we can package them as NuGet packages so that if we have any shared resources, it's easy to just grab that NuGet package off of a private feed. So when I look at these are not just the Git repositories, they're a specific branch on the Git repositories. They're the master branch on the Git repositories. And if you remember us talking about how we create topic branches that trigger CI builds, and once we merge them back to master, that's when they get deployed, right? To whether or not it's a dev environment or a NuGet feed or something, they get packaged, versioned, and deployed. So when I look at these tiles saying that there's a bunch of different changes, those are changes on master, which means this is how often we're deploying, right? So that's how I look at that, is that we've deployed 17 new changes in the last 24 hours for web.aurelia.
And I want to share that is now how I interpret those reports. That's an extra input, right? As we mm-hmm. get that, how we manage these things, we grow collaboratively and mm-hmm. understanding what those things mean. And I knew it was in there, but I hadn't thought of it in that particular way. Mm-hmm. That's part of that collaboration. Good thing we're doing this MVA.
Yeah.
Let me show you another area, and this is kind of getting maybe into the weeds a little bit from what James would do, but I sometimes want to see code. I want to see, is code working? What's happening? what pull requests do we have? Remember, James said that things happen very quickly, not long-lived requests. So the other place I go is I drop into code, and I go and I see the requests that appear under here. So here's Web Aurelia, and I'm going to look at the pull requests. Might not have too many because this is relatively new, but I can see we've got two that are waiting to be reviewed and approved and pulled in. Mm-hmm. I can also look at the completed ones, and again, we have very few completed ones here because it's new, right? We had kind of a
brand new rewrite,
right? Yeah. So we had the whole rewrite with lots of commits, but full. Not too many of those. If we go back to our old website, on the other hand, mm-hmm. and we take a look there at the completed pull requests, we're going to find a whole bunch of pull requests. Mm-hmm. So just a lot of things that we can get to provide us with information about what's happening. And I can see when they were created, when they were pulled. So like here we have, you know, 3.5, 3.6, 3.6, pretty active day. Then we didn't do anything on the web for a chunk, about mm-hmm. 2 weeks. It can make me a little bit nervous, but I can see that, and I can say, well, what did we do? And I can open it up and basically see, like we saw before, the distance in the code, plus any comments I might have made and stuff like that. I might also go and look at the history of web by taking a look at the commits and taking a look at the various commits that occur here. And I might look at other things like master, and I can look at the other ones like entity module or any of these others that happen to be on here. Mm-hmm. And lastly, I come and I usually take a look at branches.
Oh, I love this.
I know, it's useful because stuff that's out of date too far probably doesn't matter much anymore, and we might want to clean it up. And we haven't cleaned these up for,
we try to clean them up, you know, from time to time, but there are times where we go look at it and we're like, oh, we got like 12 branches that are like 100 commits old.
Right.
Can we clean them up, or are there some things that we just kind of want to keep around because there's some logic there that we may want to reuse? We can't merge it, but we can take that code and put it into a new branch.
Sure, absolutely. Like instrumentation key on base layout, it's 332 commits behind our current master. And basically that means 332 commits have occurred in our new master branch since this one was created. And this one's ahead by just one commit. Mm-hmm. So really, it's a relatively small commit. And we can go in and, of course, look at that very specific commit if we want to see what changes were made. And looks like there's some serious changes. Mm-hmm. So we probably do want to maybe keep that around. But I look at the code because I think having the code available to you provides you an idea of what's happening, what's the churn happening inside the development team. And I want to know those sorts of things. And now I'm going to get to my favorite of all of the managerial things, and which is looking at the work from the perspective of a backlog board, where I'm looking at the actual flow inside of a board. And this is our Kanban board. And if we look here, I can see we have a bunch of new items over here that we need to work on. And we've got some very few approved items. Approved means these are the next things to work on. Over here, we have some part-time work. These are done by generally Shad, Tim, and myself work on part-time work. James, right now, you're doing a little bit of part-time work. Mm-hmm. He's not full-time on the project. But if we go to Colin or Stan, they're going to sit here on this current focus, and we can see what they are working on in depth. And so we can see a lot of these various things. Oh, here's that TFS at scale testing rig where we generated a million rows of changes very rapidly in a very condensed period to test out that part of the transform. We've got the doing and done columns here, and I can see what's happening. And I guess this is clear for me. I want to see these things moving relatively rapidly through this system. And when we get to customer feedback, we are now in production. Notice there's a little information box here. I can click that and it'll say, we have received customer feedback. That's their definition of done for moving that off.
I've never seen that before.
Yep. But I'm going to show you where that is.
Yeah.
If you go to customize column, they now have definition of done, and you can edit the definition of done.
That's
right there.
So cool.
I know, isn't that cool? Just added. So, they ship this every three weeks. VSO ships every 3 weeks. So we're constantly being delighted by new features that pop in. Doing done columns is relatively new as well. Mm-hmm. So customer feedback means we've already shipped it to production, so I can look at this get feedback. Now, this was the one that we had made, mm-hmm. and I'm going to go ahead and move that to done, assuming that we've gotten customer feedback.
Yep.
We actually probably do want to reach out because it is a real one, but I'll move it off for now. The other thing that I use is called the cumulative flow diagram. And this shows the flow through all of the states. We've got the new stuff, that's our backlog basically, and then how much work in process we have. That's all the blue stuff, and done is our completed work. And notice we've kind of spread out and we have a work in process that's a little bit broader. And if we look back on our board, you know, that kind of freaks me out. If I look back on the board, current focus, there's 12 out of 4 sitting yep. in that column. Where is most of it? It's all in this done column, but it has not gotten customer feedback. Am I jittery? I'm jittery. James, why do we have 12 things out there?
I was actually going to point this out when we were looking at the Kanban board, but you pointed it out, which is great. So one component of our application is a thick client that gets installed on a client site. So most of our application, most of the components we can deploy on demand whenever we feel like it. And so usually those things get put into the customer feedback column quite often. We had some pretty major bug fixes and some enhancements that we wanted to make to the application that is on the client side. We decided to batch those things, and so we got them completely finished. We tested them all. We just haven't deployed it out to the client because we want it to be one install versus 3 or 4, right?
And you gotta love that, right? So the response from James, which it was good to hear, is that we have pushback from our customers on how fast they can accept things. Mm-hmm. It's not us blocking ourselves. And now I find that out. And I see that. We're radically exceeding our WIP limits there.
Yep.
Right? And we've usually run it so far under our WIP limits that it's real refreshing to see that. But it, I mean, not refreshing to see it, this, but to have a difference so that we can talk about the difference. Mm-hmm. This gives me an idea of what's happening and how long I can expect something to take before it gets delivered into production. Mm-hmm. And in here, we can make some changes. Sometimes people don't want to see, you got a 30-week max, but we may not want to see all that. We might want to go from the 12th or something and see a different view mm-hmm. of it. Okay, that's the cumulative flow diagram. That's one of my key things. I will go and look at the builds. And I'll verify, you know, I can see some builds here. I can look at some of the various builds.
You should open up that web build.
This one? Or this one?
That one.
Okay. What's it? Oh, is it the test runs complete?
Yes.
Yes, we promised we'd show you that. Remember, we pushed the magic button. And so now we have deployed to production. We had 4 tests. Now we have an additional 6, which go out to the additional 6 alpha customers.
Yep.
Push to. That's perfect. Thanks for bringing me out there again. But I want to see those builds. These are all the things that I use to kind of manage the project in addition to your standard management practices of kind of like walking through and seeing if people are frustrated or not and, you know, engaging. Yeah. But these are the things to know. Are we flowing and are we working through the systems? And before I turn it over to you, I want to bring up one, I think, that for me is a very important point. When I'm looking at the Kanban board, there are some things that can happen which are devastating for productivity. And we ran a kind of an experiment. I let some things sit in this approved column, which means it's the very next thing to go for a long, long time. We had some things that were building out our environment so we could run it all locally, right? Mm-hmm. And we got to a 90% solution that was good enough and everybody was kind of using it and nobody wanted to finish it because they had more important things to do, but no one wanted to remove it. And interestingly, James, if I look back at the data and pull it out, what I find is that during that time period when there were those two things blocking it, people didn't treat the board with much respect at all. In fact, they didn't even treat the backlog with respect. So what was happening was new ideas would bubble up to the top during discussions. They would be dropped in as a new idea and immediately moved into development. They didn't go through any vetting. Well, we all vet together. We're a small team. But they didn't go through any kind of formal discussion around what MVP does this belong in. And because of that, those things sitting there, it kind of constipated the flow through this Kanban board, and it caused us to behave in ways that probably weren't wise. Were they catastrophic? Absolutely not, right? We were delivering all the value we needed to deliver, but we weren't thinking through what theme or package could be put together and get out the door at the other end. Now, I want to show you how that theming works. If I go up and look at features, I'm going to go up one level and look at features. We have one feature inside of here. It's the packaged services MVP. And if I open it up, this is it. Boom. What do I need to do? When do I need to do it? All child user stories is complete. And here are the various child user stories that need to be complete in order for that to take place. And if we scroll over, we can see a lot of these are committed, which in our case is in the done column from the coding, but not yet validated. Another way to look at this is to go to the backlog and see the decomposition from features down to those backlog items. And we can see here's the packaged services MVP. These are all the things we have to do urgently to get done. And when we came up with this MVP, we also decided that what goes on our backlog board are only items from that MVP. So it allows us to focus and it allows us to understand what's happening and get that transparency. I can see everything that's happening on this board. Can I interpret it? Not necessarily. We needed to talk to James to find out what's happening, but it points me in the right direction. And here's the thing. As a product manager, I want to be sure that I'm not managing by some kind of arbitrary schedule, even if they're schedules that James has put on and said, it's going to take me this long to do it and this long to do this. Because chances are, James is going to get fragmented from work that comes in that's not related. He's going to get run into something that's going to be more difficult or potentially less difficult. And I want him to be able to just flow those things through and give me an understanding and not be so necessarily date-driven, but flow-driven. Dates are important, but flow is absolutely critical. And that's where I want to target my understanding of what's happening. Mm-hmm. I'm going to turn it over to you to see how you use it. Plus, you got to show me how to build one of these wonderful things. You've got this nice...
Perfect, yeah.
You've got one of these things, this requirements chart or the standard work items. Show me how to build these.
Okay.
And show everyone how to build those.
Cool. So these things, just like the tiles, are built off of work item queries. Well, at least the blue tiles, right? Mm-hmm. We basically create a work item query to filter whatever work items we want to look at or want to focus on. And then we can build a variety of different charts based off of those work items. So if we jump into Visual Studio Online, there's this little work tab. The first hub on that is the backlogs, right? We have the backlog and the board. The board is typically what I pay attention to, right? Because I only care about the next thing on the backlog, right? I mean, when we talk about the backlog and groom the backlog, yes, we're going to focus on that. But on a day-to-day basis, I come in here and say, okay, I'm working on this, Colin's working on that, Chad's working on that. I'm done with my bit. Now I just go over here and approve and grab the next thing.
Wait. All right, don't you first go and say, is there anything I can do to help Colin finish that work sooner?
Yes. I do that first, obviously.
That's but, good to hear.
But I typically look at the Kanban board and pull requests, right, so that I know I'm not blocking, as well as builds, right? So builds, great to have it on the front page, say, oh, is any of the builds broken? We'll see that, and if there are, we go fix them, right? That's a very high priority because that blocks everything,
yep.
Right? Pull requests are the same way, right? If we have a long-running pull request out there, that just means that's code that hasn't been merged back into master,
yep.
Right?
And worse, if that code hasn't been merged back into master, if you wait too long, you might have conflicts. Then you got to merge the conflicts and merge things.
A bunch of extra work has to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Get it into production as quickly as possible.
Yeah. So on this work hub, on the other side, there's this queries button here. In here, we have all of our shared queries, all of my queries, all that sort of stuff, right? So what I'm going to do is I'm going to create a new query based off of some just arbitrary data. Let's say, let's look at requirements that have created date of the last 30 days.
Okay. Yeah. Sounds good.
Cool. So I'm going to come in here and create a new query and say I want a work item type in the group or the in group of the requirements category. That will pick up anything in the requirements category.
So in our case, that's bugs.
That's bugs and product backlog items, okay. Right? And the great thing about this is if any new work items get added to the requirements category, this will just pick them up, right? It's not specific to work items themselves. The next thing I want to do, I don't want the state to be removed. I don't care about removed.
Right.
Right? I don't care about removed at all. So I'm going to get rid of that. So work item type is requirement category, and the state is not removed. Now I'm going to add a new column and say, and the created date, oops, is going to be greater than at today, oops, minus 30 days. Let's do 60 days.
Okay.
And let's run it to just see what we get. And it looks like we've got 30 work items, and they're all in various states. I think this is pretty good.
Yeah, it looks good.
Right? So the next thing I have to do is I have to save this query. This has to be a public query that I save so that I can actually pin it to the team page. So I want to hit this save query as and give it requirements created in the last 30 days. And I'm going to change the folder from my queries to shared queries. I'm going to hit OK. And what that does is that creates this query down here, and it's now public. Now, Steve can go in and look at shared queries, and he'll be able to run that query himself and see these work items, modify the query, do all that sort of stuff. The next part of this, there's tabs at the top. We've been looking at the editor tab for the query. There's a charts tab for the query. Here's the charts tab right here. If you just go ahead and click that, you can now just create as many charts as you want that's associated with that query. This is the really cool part. It's really easy to create these. So I just say, hey, new chart. Let's just create a pie chart real quick. I want to create a pie chart. So pie chart selected over here on the left. And I say, I want to base it off the state. And I want to do counts. And that's it. So now we have a pie chart.
Nice.
That fast, that easy. All right, let's do another one and say, I want to see who these are assigned to. Just like that. Nine are unassigned, eight are with Colin, six are with Stan, four are with Shad, three are for me. Right? Okay, so now let's go ahead and create a stacked area graph, which is more of that graph we saw at the top, right? Or in the front on the homepage. So we want to stack by state, and we can see committed, done, new, and approved. And we can go off the count, which is what we want. We can say last 7 days or just last year. Maybe not last year because we're in the last, last 60 days?
I think you did last 60 days, so probably want to do
12 weeks.
12 weeks. There you go.
There we go. And then we say sort by value or label. Unfortunately,
unfortunately, it's alphabetical, and yeah. So you don't get a nice cumulative flow. Done needs to be at the bottom. But it's a very, you see bars that pops out that is on the home team. It's there. I look at it just mm-hmm. to kind of make sure I see the done rising.
Yes, yes.
But I like the cumulative flow that I opened up and kind of walked through mm-hmm. the whole cumulative flow. That one's much more consistent because it's yep. in the right state orders.
Yeah, and that's good because you can add more states. You can change the query and that sort of stuff. The only issue is that you can't customize the query on the back end, right? It's specific to your backlog.
Right.
Whereas this, you could do, hey, I just want to look at these specific items that are part of this feature, and I want to get a cumulative flow off that.
Yep.
Cool.
Excellent. Yeah. I think that kind of, you know what? I do want to do one more demonstration here, because
yeah.
I think there's an important one. And if we're back at Visual Studio, I'm going back into the code place, because there's something that I think is interesting in code. And that's if I go into our pull requests, there is an abandoned pull requests. This is work we did that we're throwing away. We just abandoned these completely. Why are you wasting so much time doing all this work that we're throwing away?
There's a couple reasons. The first one is we'll have pull requests, and then we'll actually have a second pull request that included the first pull request's code. So if we just accept the second one, the first one just is, it becomes abandoned because we don't need it anymore. The
right.
code's already been incorporated. It's already been accepted. So that's probably a majority of our abandoned code requests or pull requests that happen. The other ones, it kind of comes back to that idea of failure is okay, right? So there's been times where we implemented a feature or implemented a bug fix. We created the code, we created the branch, we pushed the branch, we created a pull request, and we're all like, let's try it this way instead and see what happens. And we tried it the other way, and we're like, we like that much better. That works a lot better. It's a much cleaner solution. So let's abandon the other one and create a pull request here. Right, so it's okay to throw code away because we learned a way not to do it. And now it's historical, right? We can go back and say, hey, we tried it this way, but it didn't really work out. So we went down a different route.
I absolutely love it. And I was kind of challenging James there as part of that, but what are you wasting all this time for? But the reality is, I would rather see code not delivered to production if it doesn't provide substantial value, because every line of code that you put in prod and into your code line that you don't need, it still has to be maintained. Every bit of it has to be maintained, bug fixed, all that stuff. The code that is the most maintainable code is the code that is never, ever written and deployed, right? Don't deploy features you don't need. And if you put a feature into production that you don't need, rip it out. We went through this process. We went through and we built a wonderful feedback page for people to go in and do feedback and give us feedback.
Cool stuff
in the feedback form. And we showed it to customers. They're like, yeah, but I can't attach an image and it's a reporting application. Like, oh. And it ended up being kind of a difficult thing. And he said, well, why don't you just have a mail to link? Email works and I can cut and paste into that. And so we took this really complicated and very beautiful code and we ripped it out and we lost that functionality because we didn't want to have to maintain it. So when we came to like web.aurelia, the new Aurelia port of the thing, we just didn't even have to worry about updating that piece of the code. Keep your code simple, keep your code clean. Just huge recommendations from that visibility and transparency piece. And have those old ones sitting there that say, hey, we don't need them, we don't use them. Anything else, James?
No. That's kind of how I use the work items and the dashboards and that sort of stuff on a day-to-day basis. It's really about how can I effectively not block my teammates, but also get my work done and continue flowing value through the system.
Perfect. And I love that term. How can I not block my teammates and how can I flow value through the system? And when you've got that kind of focus, that means you can very quickly get stuff shipped out into production. I get a little freaked out if I don't see something going to production at least once a day or at least three or four times a week, right? Because it's like, what's happening? What's going on? Yeah. Are you building too big of things? Mm-hmm. And other times I know what's coming. A lot of the Aurelia rewrite, a little bit bigger, that sort of thing takes longer. And I understand that, but it's that give and take and that understanding supported by what I see in Visual Studio, but enforced by my discussions that I have with the team. And it lets me ask the right questions. And frankly, it lets you ask the right questions of me, like, we don't know the priority. Like, there was a difficulty at a time where we didn't know what that priority really should be.
Yeah.
And James kind of raised the flag and he said, you know, I know what I could work on, but I don't feel a theme. I don't feel like we have this. And we went and created a theme and took that very seriously. Mm-hmm. It's that collaborative work. So one more thing, and I want to talk about two areas. And the first is the three reports that you should be watching for, at least two. I showed the cumulative flow report. I think it is absolutely critical. And I want to walk you through why it's so important. Let's go take a look at a cumulative flow. And I'm going to show a cumulative flow. And this is the cumulative flow for requirements. I took out the new state because that's just the backlog. And I don't think we really need to see the backlog. So I kind of removed that. But if we look at this team, it's part of like demo data here, but it's a real team, but demo data. If we go over and just see what's happening, we can see these very stair-step type thing. James, what type of development generally has a lot of stair steps?
This typically looks like a scrum team or a very iterative team, right? They have very defined sprints or releases, small releases that they go through, and then they deliver them all at the end of the sprint.
Yep.
Right.
And you get to really feel what that means for this team when you look at this. There's that kind of that spike. They finish and they get to done at the end of the sprint. For them, done is production. So we have that kind of stair-step model. But we can do a couple other things here, too. We can get rid of the closed and look at this as a finger chart. So this is very similar, but it shows the total work in process. This is the stuff they're working on. And notice the waves they go through. There's a lot of work in process. End of the sprint, not much. Mm-hmm. They do a little pre-work where they add some items in. A lot of work, little work, but it's starting to mellow out a little bit.
Yeah.
I like to see that. But I think that's interesting, but I'm going to switch to another view, which is a control chart, because this one's freaking me out a little bit. This shows cycle time and lead time. Cycle time is how long does it take, and this is the second chart you should be watching. A lot of people call it a scatter plot, could be a control chart. We argue about namings, but the idea here is once a work item is done, how long did it take to deliver? Mm-hmm. And if you'll see here, this one took from a lead time perspective 115 days. So from the time we put it in the backlog as a new item until it was done was 115 days. Mm-hmm. Reality is the dev teams really only have control over cycle time. This is when it goes into in process till it's done. Mm-hmm. But if I look at this and I look at these together, I see this just hardcore cadence. Nothing gets done until the very end of the sprint. What does that do to testers?
Just slams them.
Just slams them, generally.
Yeah. Yeah.
This is indicative of a new Scrum team.
Yeah.
So this is the idea. If you're looking at these types of metrics, and these just fall out of TFS, cumulative flow is out of the box. It's just right there for you to grab and look at. The cycle time is just doing a work item query export, calculating some cycle time in Excel and spitting this out. But you can see very much, and that's VSO or TFS, but you can see this hardcore cadence of only delivering right at the end of the sprint that starts to moderate.
Yeah. And which looks great.
I know, and this looks like a maturing team.
Can I just jump into?
Yes.
So the one thing I really like about the graph is that you'll see the lead time take this very linear, incline at the very beginning, right? That's usually indicative of we had a bunch of upfront requirements that we created all at once, and we deliver them iteratively, right? So it goes back to that water scrum fall that Steve was talking about earlier, where we build up all this big BRD document, and then we deliver them chunk by chunk by chunk.
Yep.
And you can see that in the control chart where the lead time continues to grow up, but the cycle time stays pretty similar across the board.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think that's a fantastic way to look at it. In fact, if we look at this particular chart, we'll see that linear flow growing up, helping us understand that we have a bunch of these initial requirements that we establish. But look, let me get rid of cycle time here for ease. Look at how many of these have short lead times.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, when I talked to this team, James, I asked them, it looked like you're kind of in a competitive situation or you're learning lots, it's a new market. And in fact, it was, because so many of these items went into the backlog and just immediately went into the next sprint. Mm-hmm. They had a lot of churn in their requirements. They didn't get them all right up front.
And look at the sprint after that. You can see they actually don't have any from the original backlog anymore.
Right, yeah, none from the original backlog anymore.
They're all new.
Yep, all new. So that's that control chart. But I want to come back to this kind of spreading out in the cycle time. So you can kind of see them, the jammed together and then spreading out. Mm-hmm. And let's go back and take a look at the cumulative flow, because that's that piece again. But let's look at just the tester activity. And if I look at just what the testers are responsible for,
oh, love this.
You don't want to see sharp spiky points in a cumulative flow, or in this case a finger chart. But you can see the testers had very little to work on the 15th of December. They had 4. By the time we get to the 18th of December, they had 16. So it's like the dev team just piled stuff onto them at the end, and then they did it again, right? And the test group sit together with the devs, but the test group probably came back and said, enough already, figure this out. And this happens with maturing Scrum teams, is the devs, if they have dev and tester types, and not everyone is completely generalized, the developers will decide, you know what, we've got 6 devs on this team, or 5 devs, we got a backlog of 12 or 12 items, rather than each of us take one product backlog item. You know, James, you and I are going to grab one of these small ones, even though it's kind of in the middle of priority, and get it done by tomorrow. We'll work together, we'll finish it up, and get it into the hands of the testers early to start evening out the flow. Hi, Junka, in the lean parlance, right? We want to get that nice, lean, mellow flow, which you don't see in this particular cumulative flow till the very end, or in this finger chart till the very end.
Yeah.
Anyway, that the requirements chart, it tells you so much, the cumulative flow. The control chart tells you a lot, and we'll get to more. And then the box plot, that's just a cross-check. How long did things stay in each state? We don't need new, because who cares how long things stayed there? That's the backlog, right? But it looks like things in the estimated, some stayed in for up to 28 days, but most stayed in for just a few days, 0 days.
Yeah,
kind of made the estimates and then moved them on over. Most, same thing in active. We have a median of 2 days, so they stayed, most stayed in 2 days or less. A lot of these were delivered very, very quickly. Now, if you see these all at zero, then you know what happened is somebody just finished coding and then drug them straight across.
Yep.
They just went bum, 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 bum. And so this is the kind of a cross check to make sure that you're getting legitimate data in your other two charts. And that's why those three, I think, are fantastic charts to look at. And let's go back to the slide deck because on the slides, that was those three charts to watch. That's kind of that bonus piece, if you will. Those are kind of three good charts to watch. Very easy to create all of them with Excel if you can tap into some work item queries or whatnot. And the next is using visibility to simplify estimation. And I want to kind of wrap around this. This is a control chart that has three lines drawn on it. And these three lines are very specific lines. Half of, this is just the cycle time, half of all the blue dots are below this green line. This is the 50 percentile line. Half of the blue dots are below it, half are above it. So if somebody came to me and I was running this team and they said, how long is it going to take you to finish this? And they handed me something to build. I would say, and it was kind of like the others, I would say, yeah, 13 days, about 50% of the time I'll get it to you in less than 13 days. And they might go, oh, that's not enough confidence. And I'll say, okay, let's, what kind of confidence do you like? And they might say, I want to know at an 85% confidence interval. And I'll say, great. And we go back to our control chart and we see the red line. And in the red line, it's 40 days. So we go from 13 to 40 and they and we say, 85% of the time, we're going to be able to get you your stuff done in 40 days or less. Once we pull it into our process. Now, I want to talk about estimation because estimation drives me batty. I watch too many people spend far too long on estimating. Estimations have value. Their value is in the ability to predict how long something's going to take with some level of certainty, or you could say some level of uncertainty, but we want to pick how long something's going to take so that we can align marketing around it, so that we can align other releases, etc. I'm not saying estimation is not important, but I see people doing estimates on minimum viable products where it has to be delivered. Every one of these items has to be delivered or we don't even have a product. Unless you have marketing or something else depending on it, you gotta get it done. Why even bother to estimate? It's part of it. If it has to be, if it's truly a minimum, why do you estimate? Now, let me go back to the control chart and look at this question. If my process is under control and I'm looking at this and I want to tell you with 85% confidence that I can deliver in 40 days or less, let's simulate this scrum team, this conversation we're going to have. So, James, you've got a backlog and I want to pull this next thing into the backlog. How big is this thing?
Can it get done in 40 days?
Bingo. All we care about, we're pulling it into this Kanban process, and all we care about is the one question. Is it small enough that the team is confident that they can get it done in 40 days or less? That's it. The one question we ask when we pull something through to make it predictable is, can it be done in 40 days or less? And if the team says, then let's talk about decomposition. Yep. Let's talk about further estimation. But if it's something that they think's 2 or 3 days, just yank it off and throw it in, for crying out loud. I mean, it's ready to go.
Yeah, we're not doing sprints. We're releasing every time we push to master, which is every feature or bug fix. So as long as we can predict and say, we can get this done in 40 days, then it's just whenever that next deployment goes out.
Yeah, gets very predictable behaviors, at least at the individual level. Now we have to worry about having, you know, a bucket of items, and that's a different animal. But what's interesting, there's one more thing. We did this really rough estimation and just threw it in here. Can we do it in 40 days or less? Yes. Now, while we are watching this, there's a couple of triggers that I want to alert you to, and that is when we crossed 13 days, that was our 50-50 mark. So if something that we grabbed is in our process for 13 days, all of a sudden, I want a flag to go up, just a little flag that just says, hey, you know, half the time it takes more than 13 days, half the time it takes less. We're now in the top half of what we have to deliver. And given the look of this, it's not a 15% chance we're going to go over on our time, it's a 30% chance we're going to go over or something. Mm-hmm. So all of a sudden, it's a little warning flag. Now, we may just focus on it a little bit and move on, but when we hit the 70% mark, which in our case is 29 days, when we hit that 70% mark, where only 30% of the items have taken longer than that, now we might want to say, you know, we really want to hit this 40-day mark. We might do things like swarm it, identify root cause. We may spend a little bit more time. We may choose not to pull the next thing into the process. That's what we can use this for. And the nice thing is as you start to apply that attention on that level of that 40 days, you start to actually deliver more than 85% inside that 40 days. And then everything starts moving down just a little bit. And the green and the orange might not move down, but what you might find is just a squishing of the red down to the orange level. And I think that's a real strong argument for this type of a thing, just to understand what's happening. Lastly, you don't need this many blue dots for you to make an effective estimate. James says 15. I think 15 is probably right. So you don't need a whole lot. You're going to have a lot of variations when you don't have a lot. But the idea is get it out here, identify these locations, and start knowing and becoming more predictable on your flow through your system with something like a control chart. Just wanted to throw that out there. I think it's huge in visibility, and I wanted to do kind of a little bit of a talk around estimation. I think it's important. That we address different styles of estimation. And I think this is legitimately a very different style of estimation. James, that's all I have in visibility. Do you have anything you want to add?
Nope. That's good. I love that. I love just flipping the perspective on estimation of who cares how big it is as long as we just get it done within 40 days.
Yeah, exactly. That's our 85%.
Yeah.
Everyone, this has been an amazingly fun MVA for us to present. I hope you enjoyed it as well. I want to thank you all very much for coming. There is a survey right at the end. I would really appreciate it if you all filled out that survey. And farewell. Thank you very much for attending. We're going to stay online for a few more minutes answering any last questions. Until next time, I'll see you. I'm Stephen Borg.
And I'm James Tupper. Thank you.
Bye.